Okay, story. Let's take the fair lady story here that I started with today. I mean, the part of it I started with today. And in other words, thank you for your cooperation. And with the last chocolate I'm allowed to eat this Sunday evening, I will now just see if there was anything more to it, which I think there was. Now she is transformed. Maybe we should have, by now, introduced an antagonist or something. Well, no. She should just go out there. I don't know where these super rich gather, or how it looks like, but used to be these men's clubs, right? Country club kind of thing. Anyway, so there is some place here. We can invent it. Yeah, it could be one of those. We got London, for instance. Ariel. And going down to the city of London. And then oh, I think this Australian girl, what's her name? Could be good for this. Who's the biggest Australian actress right now? She's so old also. Anyway, I think they will. And learn to manage that triviality of aging. If they haven't already. Anyway. You're there, city of London. The street is a huge building. We're coming down with a drone kind of thing there, right? The kind of buildings we were shown on our tourist bus trip. Down on the street, you see it's super exclusive. This old-fashioned building. And we are in a POV view here. Somebody's walking. And you see a person walks up to the outdoor, front door of one of those super buildings, old buildings. That is a building that is not very conspicuous, it's conservative. And once you look closer, you see it's super, it's like a fortress. and it's really classy. You come in there, it's just finger pushing a code or something. Or pulling a card. And then they come in there in this entrance and stairs. I mean, really magnificent architecture from far way back. And you see these exclusive gentlemen walking around there, being relaxed and like that. And then a lot of service people walking around there with plates and drinks and all kinds of things like that, back and forth in their rooms in all directions. And these classical stairs, really, really huge, magnificent stair going all the way up there. And you can see it's pretty high, maybe 4 floors or something, maybe 5. And there's a huge stairway. You can see the floors up there. People are up all the, almost like a big shopping house there in the middle. But you can see it's like a club for the super rich and super influential. One of those completely hidden away discreetly. We just make one up that looks cool enough. And you see, we kind of go there with a steady cam through the rooms, some rooms, and there you see these different scenes. There are groups of people sitting talking, and they're mainly men, elderly, and you can see they are the controllers. Of the world, the elite. We have to somehow show that. Or we have it like this, that this could be fun. There's a demonstration on the street out there. And there is this spectacular building where the Bilderberger group or whatever they're called are having a meeting, and so hotel conference center is all really flashy, high tech glass and steel and aluminium. You have demonstrants outside there on the street with their, you know, sign, holding up their signs, stop the Bilderberger group, and all that, down with the elite, those kind of conspiracy theorist types. And then you see a big black limos coming with these super fancy men there in the super fancy costumes. And then the crowds are booing them, you know, they are arriving to that Bilderberg meeting or whatever. Some leak had revealed that. And then they and then you follow those men in there into that super fancy place. And it's revealed somehow, depending on how comical we want to make this. When they come in to that place and lock the door, they are just going out of character, and they're kind of just sitting there starting to play games and whatever. Cards, drinking. We can see that they are really just dressed up to look like such rich, influential top leaders. I mean, if we want to, we can play around like that, not necessary. And then you see them from outside the window. And then from behind another window on the opposite side of the street, and that's a completely discreet building that nobody cares about. I don't know if we can get this together, but something, I'm just playing here. And then you see, you have quick cuts there. Steps walking, and now this is POV perspective, a person walking down that street and seeing the demonstrants, and then again cut into the building, whichever building we are dealing with right now, and so we establish those two buildings in front of each other and the demonstrants, but then somebody in POV walking. And then that person is maybe here already seen from the front, and it's our Fair Lady. Or maybe that person just with continue POV, and then that person walks but turns the other direction, not into that fancy hotel conference center looking building with all those important looking men just entered, but towards the other building, just, you know, that old door we were talking about, code lock in, and then meeting this majestic environment with really, really fancy stuff and really, really the top leaders. And we're talking business leaders and politicians, because they are, yep, playing hand in hand. And as she steps in there, then we see her from the front, and it's our Fair Lady. And the men, they kind of just, oops, they stop there, some holding some drink and not spilling it, but almost. And in other words, she raises eyebrows because of her spectacular good looks. And also the... Although this is not purely a male club as it used to be, it has been modernized. There's a lady here and there. It's still very dominated by men. And the women that hang out there are generally old, influential politician ladies and wives of big businessmen who are, yeah, this kind of super high class ladies, upper class men. But then Our Lady is like, she's young, she's really good looking, she's really smart looking, and she's got that, yeah, that perfect balance there between someone who could be a businesswoman, who could be a celebrity, an actress type, and somebody who could be some royalty, with that innocence of, you know, Marilyn Monroe had a little of that in her younger age, that's that charming innocent style, but not in the, not again with the typical femme fatale spice that is often mixed in nowadays in such a character. But really, I mean, the opposite. She may be trying to look more femme fatale-ish than she actually is, and she will not be able to really hide. But, you know, she's a good-hearted vegetarian or vegan activist girl who really wants to do good for the world, and non-violence and honesty and sustainability and all of that, organic fairness. So that's the character that we could really make it like that. So when she is there in those, on that level of society, she of course stands out, and people become confused. They don't really know how to deal with her. Even the upper class, they don't know if they should be condescending or respecting her, and they try to find faults, and there are faults. She of course has her own style, but she has that charm and intelligence. So the men all fall for her, and the women, they don't really. But she could meet some younger, her age, one or two maybe there, also of that kind, politician maybe, translators even, you know, these all kinds of folks, and IT personnel and servant, all kinds of people except for those fine ones. So she is at first raising eyebrows and then moving around in that environment as if she was born there, and it becomes so easy because the men are then completely sold out to her, and she can start playing with them, which is really much about what this film is, should be about. And the first thing, which I can't remember yet, that made me talk all this I've been talking today, was one way that she would be doing this. And it has something to do with the sexual. And that has something to do with something I saw on some social media today. You know, I could do some research into this, but examples of how ladies on that high level, so-called, among those men. Are being treated and we can make a bit of a parody on that too, the male chauvinism, this male idea of getting laid with another one of those new rich ladies, whatever they are. And they were maybe competing, old men sitting there in those huge old armchairs from the 16th century or something, and competing, you know, who can get that one. That kind of, that would be also a bit fun, this really top sophisticated guys just behaving like any old Joe at a local bar or something. But then she would start playing them, and really I don't want her to be some sly con girl who's just, but she should do it with, again, this kind of innocence, just by, okay, so she gets introduced to a huge military industrial complex boss. I mean, we're talking now, the boss here, who's sitting there with the prime minister of England, Great Britain, or something like that. And she's being introduced by some other lady. And I mean, some of those men may even think that, maybe that big guy does think that she's an escort girl that has been, somebody has supplied to their club that day, which they do sometimes, but less formally maybe. So there is some confusion which we can make some fun of also. And I don't know, I mean, if we should it could be like this. At this super company, whatever it's called, it's known for a peculiarity, namely that the owner and CEO and chairman of that company, the sole owner, the by far majority owner, is unknown. He has been working through a very sophisticated encryption communication system that he has himself developed, because he just wants to be undisturbed. He doesn't like to be famous or anything like that. He's a cool guy. He just slipped into this, and then he was smart enough to hide himself. So we can have some fun with that. How does he get into that building, not anyone knowing who he is, while he has his own elevator going all the way up there and then down to the garage, which is only his. And he comes there sweeping in with his vehicle or through some other underground construction tunnel, driving this kind of boring company thing. I mean, it's something spectacular. And so he comes and goes there with nobody knows how. It's a completely secret and safe entrance for him. Of course, he can also enter through the main doors too, and nobody knows who he is. He can have another ID. So now that's all in her power, and maybe when she's walking out of there, he gives her, you know, that since she has the code, then he just points at that elevator, or they go down together. Maybe that, I think that could be good, and then he can explain some stuff why he does that. That's good, actually. He gives her a little manual and us. So anyway, that means that nobody knows who is the owner of that company. And they could look, they look out, even here in this fancy place, they look out the windows and they see that skyscraper or pyramid-like, whatever it is. It could be a little bit Indian temple shape on it. It could be symbolizing Meru, because maybe that guy is sitting up there reading ancient Indian scriptures, and that's why he now decided to just quit and go to India instead. And maybe he is not trying to commit suicide. Maybe he is trying to fly. He got in his head that he can fly. Maybe he's a yogi or something. So he's a little wacky, but she saved his life. Anyway, so here we are now, and they look at that building, and they try to kind of probe her, ladies and men standing there with their cocktails and having a conversation. And she comes in there and that little group, and they are sort of asking, what are you doing? And if I... Of course, it's a little blunt to ask straight like that, so maybe they have other ways to do it, because maybe they should all have known what she is doing. But I don't think I've seen you here before, dear. Something. And she introduces herself. I am, you know, Lady so and so. And I am in charge of this and that and this foundation or trust or whatever. And maybe the wife of the most powerful banker or something like that, really big. And Or it could be an Indian guy, a little funny, and then may I ask you for your good name? Something like that, whatever. I can play a little and just color it up a bit. And she's... They're asking, you know, and I don't know. Somebody who's more blonde says, well, what do you do? Because nobody recognizes her, and they pretend to, but they can't really keep up pretending. So at one point, American maybe just asks like that. And she said, oh, a girl has to be allowed to have some secrets, you know. Oh, I love secrets, some lady could say, and maybe another, she could be a wife of that American diplomat or whatever. Yeah, could we guess? They take it as a game, so. Are you an actress? Or they could go, and then she could just joke and say, "When I, you know, I'm the owner of that place over there." Oh yeah, sure. So you are the. And they have a name, you know, the masked shadow or something. You are the shadow. And you never know, she says, and then they all laugh, you know, that kind of little cliche, but still. Comic relief. But it should be a bit of a comedy, I think. And she moves on. And here... I don't know, really. I mean, she can't just hang around here all the time. The whole film can't just happen here. But... there are characters introduced here. It's a good opportunity for introducing characters in the film. And a real, I would say, a cabinet of, or a gallery of characters that really would represent the very, very elite. And that mix, you know, like you go to one of those secret Freemason meetings or something, and then you find all this celebrity and that politician and that royalty and this one, that kind of that people like conspiracy feeling. So it would really be like a little parody on that too. She's really moving around in those circles, and then here, even in that those rooms, we can introduce I mean, they would have a... Why are they there? They are there actually to meet about and discuss important things, but they don't sit in a huge conference hall and having boring parliamentarian meetings. They mingle like this, and they have a special style and a special language, which is... so expertly carried out that it appears to be just a relaxed, comfortable recreational social club. Situation, and there, I guess probably it is like that in those places there in London, but where big decisions are made just, you know, by mutual agreement between two people, and you find when you really walk around there, listen. And that's what people do. It's like mixing, and by doing that, you're getting the whole picture, or the picture you want to get, depending on what is your field of action. If you're in the business or in the military or this and that, there's all this going on because they are all connected. So it's very subtle, and there are many layers there, and how you conduct this. If you don't know it perfectly, then you're finished. They will expose you, you don't belong to them. But she, some of the managers too, get around it again by that charm, but also by simply being honest. Just like in the case of that, what she's doing, and she actually tells them the truth, but they take it as a joke. So it could be like that. And I'm thinking now about this movie I once saw, similar, one guy who just makes a rocket career by coincidence and mistakes, I think, in a corporation. He becomes a super big shot, and he doesn't really know what he's doing, but somehow he says something and they all take it the way they take it, and it works out beautifully. Also kind of a satire, which I like. So this could be a bit like that. And then we are now supposed to work ourselves through Act Two, which is really where we can put a lot of interesting action. Because what is going on here? And this bigger story, this story, is happening after the, whatever that story was called, the first one about the, well, is it the sandbox, or is the sandbox something else now? Yeah, I think the sandbox. Because that's about our, yeah, the kids there in that little town, and how this rich man comes in there, and the big corporations come, and how everything changes, and how they are fighting against this, and how, you know, basically the pants story we put in there, right? It's a good story in itself. And then what happens is that that little town, they challenge others who then also are maybe old timers or their children. They say, you know, up yours with the big corporations. Now, in this little town, they stood up and they they are, again have revived their textile industry, their pants industry that we thought was dead, and let's do the same thing here with this and with that, and that car industry there and this and that. So, and the idea then is free ourselves, become independent, become, we need to stand our own feet here. If there's a crisis and we don't get any import and there's a whatever sanction, you know, then we are finished. We are so vulnerable now. So that whole thing starts to move in that country. And what it is then is that this comes from not the big corporations, of course, because they just want to be bought up by the even bigger corporations and buy up others and become the bigger corporation. That's a completely different thing. So we more here paint a landscape, and I'm talking about the sandbox, the previous one, leading up to the thank you for your corporation. So there's like a grassroots revolution, not of the workers, but of that which one of my friends who was a heavy communist in the 70s told me, that the proletariat, whatever you call it in English, should also include the small family businesses and the self-employed, these honest business that people do, not in a capitalist way, by exploiting, but by producing something good and useful. Example, there was just making trousers for people, and the ladies there in the little town, they were sitting in their kitchen, so they got a little extra income, and everyone was happy because they got an income, they got a job. So, you know, daddy there who runs that, his pants factory, he's a good guy. He's not a businessman, he's an entrepreneur, producer. So we can make a statement about that. And those, they just come up one after another, like mushrooms from the ground, all over the country, that little country. And they vote out, you know, there's a political party coming up, made by them, like a revolution of the small companies owners instead of just the workers. And they are at least smart enough to realize that we are not smart enough to run a society. So they go to the, you know, the intellectuals, and they really ask them, and they go also to we need to make it sustainable and all of that, and that kind of whole thinking comes back, and from their kids also, who are now into sustainability and all of that Greta stuff. We could even have Greta in it when she's older. That could fit. So they are all getting connected to this because they also have businesses now. And youngsters, they are good, qualified, competent, talented. So this country actually takes a leading role. It's small, but it, what do you call it, places itself on the world map for being progressive in that way and standing up against the Goliath. But then, of course, Goliath, who is bigger than the biggest nation by now, this corporate, I mean, it's like a family now, corporate monsters, each one huge and extremely powerful. They could gobble up a nation in one gulp if they want. And these are just big machineries, really. They have grown so big that they are like impersonal entities, and people are just sitting working there in little cells in those bodies, and little cogwheels, we used to say, but now it's more like little cells. And nobody really knows, the people working there hardly know what's going on in totality, just as the cells in our body don't know what we are doing, right? So they're just doing their job and getting a reward for it in the form of a salary. So that's how it looks like. And then we start to see that those monsters waking up. So we shift the perspective from that little town to that country, to that election, where that people's party declares this country is now standing on its own feet. And it goes kind of off grid in a way. And then we see, that could be like in the end scene of that film, this, I don't know, it should be animated or whatever, these big monsters just starting to move. It could be like a world map. And then we see that country over there, the big America and the whatever, these places. I don't even know if they should be country map, because then it gets controversial, but something. It just shows these. Here you got big pharma, and here you got the military industrial complex, and here you got the this and that. That's not difficult to make that, and they are. We could actually alternate a little. Sometimes we illustrate such things with animations, just good old 2D animations or 3D, whatever. So that could be cool. Kind of showing big global events. And of course we can take it one step further and even show bigger events than that. I mean, going on in the mythological level with gods and, you know, above the puny little world of the earthlings. So we can really have fun there. And maybe even if we want to, we just mix in some reptilians and I don't know. Then it gets maybe too silly, conspiracy theory. But they are starting to move. And then we could even maybe see, just make a little hint at that by, when you show these monsters, they just open these eyes and they have reptilian eyes. And then that's the end of the movie. That's the Sandbox movie. So next one, the one we're talking about now, I can't stop. I might as well just let it calm here. This is fun. So in this film, and now we are in Act Two here. Thank you for your cooperation. Then we can turn back to that and continue that action there. And now we show, because what she starts to see now in these chambers, actually this could work out. Of course. She's moving around in those chambers and she's just this charming fair lady. And fair meaning that she is bright, both mentally, spiritually, but and the way she dresses and appears, but also she is fair. In other words, she is she wants everything to be fair. I mean, she can see because she's not part of this awares. And in our sandbox, yeah, that's another connection. That's where the awares appear. They are just appearing at the end there of that film as a gang forming a group, very undefined and almost, well, non-existent group, who call themselves, or someone calls them, the awares. That's all, basically. And they have also a tight group in the middle, which is not so visible, but we know that they have actually been created by these kids from our sandbox film or book, based on the writings and whatever productions done by a very curious and unknown individual who is sometimes called the janitor, or sometimes called Priyavrat, or something like that. He has some, nobody really knows who it is, but it's some writer who writes under pseudonym. That's not more than that, no one really cares. Who wrote a book or whatever, did something like, you know, conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh thing, but in another dimension, another style, more cosmological, and wanted to gather the gathered wisdom of the planet and present it in a way, a new worldview that would save the world, because it's not just some kind of material science, but it's about life and us living in the real world with a real understanding of ourselves and so on. And that's kind of his message there. So he developed some kind of cult following. Nobody knows if he's still alive or when he lived and whatever. So he's a mystery, but you have this awares there, and which now in this film has grown all over the world, and you find it there in this Asian country where we are. And our girl, our fair lady, happens to be part of such a local community or whatever, of such awares, not hackers, but I don't know what they should call them. They just call themselves awares. Some people may call them hackers, but in that case, they are social hackers. So them, we should not really allow them to come up here. We just, in the last story, we just saw them appearing, coming into existence. And how here we now meet them again when they're a little older. They're established all over the world. And they have a program, they have a way to deal with things, and it's about fairness. It's about somehow or other hacking the machinery. There are different ways, you know, some are more like trying to kill these monsters, starving them by boycotting their, refusing to buy the useless products and be part of their big machinery like that. But that tends to lead to wars, because then you trigger these, the defense mechanism in those, and they are now, by now they are extremely sophisticated. They have an enormous power, political power, which means that they can basically make societies do what they want them to do. People do and believe and think and act and feel what they want them to, and so on. They have total control over media and all the mind manipulating agencies and technologies there are, and they are so subtle that most people don't even know they exist, but they do, and we show that. And so, but this aware group, they are doing it the other way. For instance, when there is this AI now, which we can follow all the way through, developing, and we see how it's starting to approach that singularity point there, and of course what they're describing here with this corporation, it's all run more and more by that AI, because it's a very efficient way to keep it all running, and they think now that everything will be perfect and everyone will be happy. But they have of course programmed their idea about happiness into it, which is really about them being in control, and they're that, because them are really the corporations, right? So they have programmed the whole thing into do what corporations are supposed to do according to their own bylaws, and that is to produce, generate profit. So everyone else is just included in that big scheme. In other words, if you would take a super, super powerful entity today, which is basically an AI entity called a corporation, run by computers or with a super AI computer on top, and you let it loose, you let that AI loose, which is built upon the premises of materialism and of the very constitutional laws that those corporations are built and based upon, because that's what a corporation is, generating profit for the shareholders. Then you let it just go uncontrolled, and what will it do? It will simply create a situation where it's a parasite, really, because it will just stand there on the earth, on this planet, and suck out whatever resources it can in order to generate profit more and more, right? So that's really what's going on. But at the same time, in order to make it look, you know, because no one likes to get exploited and, you know, all of that, and they would get all these communists coming up there again, and revolutionaries and all that. So therefore they have not made the whole construction perfect by the control of people's minds through media and all of that. And in all these games and the movies and the stories being told all over the place and the news and everything, they are building messages into those stories that shape the reality of people. In other words, we're living in a free world, we're all free, and over there in that other place, which happens to be the places that don't want to play in this game, they are not free, you see, they are brainwashed and they're all that bad, and the leaders are monsters and so on. So they can create any image they want, because it's just about painting images in minds of people and hinder them from getting access to any other information like that. It's simple. So that's what they are doing. And again, this is more and more done by this AI. But what really makes this story interesting is that the more they do this, the more sophisticated this whole system becomes of these corporations, there's a great weakness in there. And it is that the whole thing is so computerized and so dependent on experts, computer experts of different kinds. And the more it goes, the more AI becomes, the more super-duper computerish it becomes, the more sophisticated that technology is, the fewer people do actually know what is going on. And even the top leaders, all those people in those fine places where now fair ladies are starting to move around, they are dependent on these often kids who are often hackers. They live double lives, and she is just one of them who just happened to slip into this incredible opportunity of living that double life. So this could be very interesting. And so what they do then, she is gathering information. And I don't know exactly how this second act should play out, but this is like setting the scene at least. And I already had this idea that they should reprogram this AI, so we can put that one in there. It becomes about that. Instead of trying to kill it, you're trying to make it become good. And so there are these, not viruses, but vaccine injected there into all these computers, spreading like wildfire and reprogramming this AI, which is, I guess, a distributed computer now or whatever, in such a way that it... Well, it's so interesting because Elon Musk, and this is not my story world, but I saw it on Twitter or something, or YouTube, when he was speaking straight out to this guy there at Fox. What's his name? Anyway. That he wanted to make another ChatGPT called TrueGPT, and it is supposed to tell the truth, and it is supposed to just learn to understand nature and give therefore the best advice and guidance to that we can, you know, from all our gathered wisdom through the ages. And that's basically what I thought should be there in this story. So we could put a bit of Musk into Rick, actually, maybe. That he just slips into something like that. Or maybe we could make her into the way that we want Musk to be. That's even better. Rick, I don't know where he should go. And how this whole thing... relates to the other books. But I don't care about that right now. I'm just focusing on these two stories. Maybe we can... I don't know. Oh, she could be the daughter of Rick or something. We train up his kids as aware as hackers, but I don't really know how to do this whole timeline of this, because if we have, I even considered doing that. Yeah, I think I have. If we look at POL, the first story would be and Pia grew up, now we are in the 60s and 70s. Up to like 78. If we should faithfully follow the real timeline. And during that time, it's very much the hippie story and the Vietnam story and the Pia story there and the Rick story and the science and the computers and the early AI ideas and the ideas of the behind the hippie movement and the all of that. Leading up to the point of Pio becoming a monk, and let me take another recording for this.